Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Good to be with you. It's fascinating markets out there this week.
Well, I noticed as we started our interview today, everything on the Bloomberg television was outlined in red. That's usually not a good thing, is it?
Yeah, so did 2% down for the NASDAQ and 2% down for S&P. That's a pretty hard hit. Now, this actually is a very important hit. And our work, we play the seasonals, and you can have a very good high in May and June. Well, let's back up one notch. You can have a high in May and June, but if it's not overbought, the rising market will likely continue to, you know, swing up and down, but trend the uptrend. But what we had this time was that the technical indicators on NASDAQ or S&P, any of them, got hugely overbought. There was exuberance there, measurable exuberance, at a time when we were looking for a high. So the normal procedure on this one is you'd look for a break in momentum, which we got, and then a downtick, and then kind of a recovery for a bit, and then the critical one comes in when you take out a previous correction low. And it's doing it all here now. So the news has been about that the employment number wasn't as good as was expected, but I take it as just it took an enormous hit here. The speculation, Jim, to reemphasize, was extraordinary on the way up, so it's getting hit on the way down. Now, this gets us into the previous great financial bubbles, the first of which was the South Sea bubble of 1720, and it peaked in June in London, financial center then. And then all subsequent bubbles in London peaked in May. So maybe that's something to do with the old saying about sell in May and go away. So anyways, if you're very overbought on a rally into mid-year, it is time to lighten up, and you're going to get the hit. Now, the point on a great financial bubble, the last one was 1929. The one before that was 1873. And the thing about it is that the financial boom is so pervasive that it booms the economy as well. And then when the market fails, the economy heads south right away, so to speak. Now, if you look back on a chart, you can get it, and I just brought one up here. The S&P, since late 1920s, the typical is that the peak in the S&P would be 10 or 12 months before the peak in the economy. And this is why the authorities have the S&P 500 in their index of leading indicators. But at the peak of a great bubble, they don't lead. It's almost like right now. So we've been in financial inflation since, certainly the 1980 dot-com bubble was financial inflation, and the stock market peaked in March, and the economy was fairly close to that. And as I said, 1929, the high for the stock market was early September, and the economy was up until August. And even going back to 1873, you can get the economy in the U.S., and the stock market peaked in September, that September as well, and the economy peaked in October. So anyways, in 2007, the stock market peaked in the middle of October, the economy peaked in December. So this is the way they work. When the stock market fails, usually the economy is fairly close to that, like within a month or so. And this is what the news related, the hit to the markets to an economic number that the street didn't like. So there we are. We're not looking for any joy in the economy whatsoever. And the stock market is looking pretty ugly. And also, we wouldn't venture out the yield curve in even treasuries. That can be vulnerable. The action in junk bonds, low grade, shows an amazing disregard for risk, because even to this week it was setting new highs in price. And it has been a very long and steady rally for junk bonds, so this should get that as well. So it was the excitement came in and peaked around mid-year, which was what we were looking for. You've had the momentum hit, and now you've had the actual price hit, and so maybe it's overdone at the moment. But what you want to look for is what happens to the financial markets after September. And we know that every great financial bubble, let's say they've peaked in May or June, got hit and then dithered around through the summer, and then suffered a severe liquidity crisis in the fall. That's all of them. And they would typically have a beginning late September, the bad times, through October with some severe panic selling. And then the markets in each of the past ones would try to clear and test themselves in November. And then that marks the end of the first panic, except there was an exception with the 1825 bubble. For some reason or other, it did the usual peak in May and then got hit in the fall. But that one, the liquidity crisis ran right through until early January. And there's a comment by one of the governors of the Bank of England saying that He did not get home for a week to visit his family. He had to stay in the city to look after the crisis. So here we are. The hot spike up was at the right time. The initial hit is at the right time, and it is now severe. There's no doubt about it. And then this gets us into the fall, which could be pretty ugly. So the advice is that when a market is hot, it appears as if there's a lot of liquidity bidding up prices. But the problem is that apparent liquidity can often be leveraged money, and that's the reverse of liquidity. It's illiquidity, to kind of coin a word. So what you want to have is the real liquidity. You want as little debt as possible, no stocks on leverage, flatten those, and just sit tight when in a liquid position. Now, if you're get into T-bills or certain kind of deposits, the short rates, such as T-bills, again head down towards zero. The Federal Reserve will, and the Bank of Canada will follow with great noise about their administered cuts. But the main thing is that you're not going to get much of a return out of short-dated instruments. But what we like is the 3 to 4 year good grade corporate bonds. You'll get a better return than with T-bills. And at, say, 4 years out, they'll be maturing at par. So you're not going to get wrecked on price fluctuations on that. You know, it's a very nice position. Actually, for the last few months, we've been talking about it for fixed income people. But hey, with the stock market now, you got to get out of the stock market and in the safe place. And this can return some money in a not too much risk sort of thing. So, I kind of like the position. And on the other hand, as the problems in the stock, in the big stock market and the big economy become more apparent, the one thing you get out of it is that gold's real price relative to the CPI, or the way we do it, relative to the CRB commodity index. We consider the CRB commodity index to be a proxy for mining costs. And if the mining costs are falling relative to the bullion price, which they have been doing for the last 6 months, mine operations, generally, their margins would be improving. And this is how Mother Nature works in a post-bubble depression. The costs of mining fall relative to the bullion price. Mining gold gets very profitable. And what happens? Production goes up. And then that, of course, goes into the banking system, no matter what today's economists may think or say. And that then begins to reliquify at least sort of the foundation, when there's a whole lot of really dreadful bonds out there failing, going to zero. I mean, junk bonds, they're just going to go no bid, and many of them will fail. So we like this nice, safe position in, as I say, 3 to 4 year corporates. One has to do a little work on it and get in touch with a full investment dealer where they can get you those bonds. So, yeah, very interesting times, Jim.
We'll take a look at some headlines with Bob right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headline: Federal Reserve is edging closer to cutting rates. The question will be soon, how fast can they cut these rates?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that one up, Jim, because during a boom, short rates, such as T-bills, go up, and the Fed raises its administered rate. And then in a bust, rates go down, and the Fed lowers its rates. But in anticipating of falling rates, the street gets very excited about it. But for hundreds of years, short rates go up in the boom, and short rates go down in the bust. And we've got a chart here. I forget which year it is. But anyway, see, the S&P and the T-bill rate. And you get the fastest drops in the S&P with the fastest plunges in the T-bill rate. And these guys are now talking it up, saying, oh, it's great, there's going to be Fed cuts, and you can buy the stock market. It is dreadful. It's intuition, and it's by people who have never looked at history, for God's sake. So I'm just going to lay it on the line. Short rates go up in the boom, and that's a good thing. It's a positive indicator. And short rates go down in the bust, and if you've been thinking it's going to be positive, you're going to be hooped. So, yeah, this next few months are going to be very interesting in the market. Now, yeah, and then there's some other headlines.
Hedge funds selling industrial stocks at record pace.
Yeah, they were doing the right thing. They were selling stocks into the rally, which I admire. That was a good one.
The longest and deepest yield curve inversion in history.
Yeah, we were talking about the yield curve. It inverted in March 2023. And the rule is that inversion is inevitably followed by recession. But there's no sort of length of the gap between inversion and when the recession starts. But I think that the signal was there in the financial markets. And what happened was that the people were coming out of the COVID shutdown, which was extraordinary. They're coming out of that and trying to get back to normal. And that has been a plus right through until recently. So, I think the inverted yield curve is now becoming effective after a long delay.
Risky bet on U.S. office towers becomes debacle in South Korea. They put too much money into U.S. commercial real estate?
It looks it, doesn't it, Jim? Yeah, you get there and you think, what in the hell? Yeah, but that's money goes. Also, it's very attractive to go from lesser countries, lesser currencies, into investments in the United States. You've got the senior currency, everything's good. So it happens. And then they also, the world buys the U.S. stock market for the same reason. Yeah.
Now, we call copper Dr. Copper because quite often the way copper is going is the way of the economy and the stock markets. Headline: funds pull $20 billion from copper as mega bull trade unravels.
Yeah, they sure moved it up. It went straight up to 520 in early June. And June. And then it can have sort of a second season. The seasonals on copper would be a high in March and then another one in July. So it was early on a July seasonal, but it did become very overbought, which we covered. And it has taken quite a crack here. So I think the best is in for most commodities. And we're facing a lengthy bear market for most commodities.
$3 trillion to combat climate change, economic folly. This from the National Review.
Yeah, I catch a headline from the National Review occasionally. I used to be a subscriber to it ages ago. I mean, really ages ago. Mm. Yeah, people are beginning to see through the folly of trying to control the climate. And actually, you can't control the climate, but they're using it to control the people and tax them. So, and Trudeau's, of course, going on endlessly about climate warming and carbon dioxide, and it's all nonsense. And actually, you're going to give money to Trudeau, and it's going to stop forest fires? Tell me about it. So, anyways, no, the global warming story is really a lot of nonsense. So, but mind you, here we there's been some heat domes over the last year that certainly have made some places hot, and it appears to be pretty warm, but it's still nothing yet as hot as it was during the 1930s. Now, that really was hot and dry in the 1930s and into the 1940s.
Well, Bob, humans always like to attribute natural phenomena or anything to something else happening. And the old argument was, is it the rising sun that makes the rooster crow, or is the rooster crowing that makes the sun rise?
Yeah.
Climate change is caused by changes in solar activity, and we're getting a lot of solar flares right now. The tilt of the Earth's orbit, and volcanoes. Well, how does a carbon tax affect any of those?
Precisely. It just doesn't. It is the IPCC was given a mandate to do one thing, relate weather and climate changes to CO2, and to study nothing else that has anything to do with climate change. So the IPCC thing has been monolithic since day one. Yeah. Now, also, I think we kind of like to talk about some gold stocks, wouldn't we?
Sure. Yeah. So what's happening with gold?
Well, this is the one that has the chance that gold's real price has been going up nicely for 7 months now. So when the real price goes up, the gold miners make more money because their costs are declining relative to the bullion price. And then we have been in a pretty good market for some of the speculative juniors. And one of the very practical way of getting a good position in the gold stocks, well, you can go for the seniors, and they'll trade with, they are mainly the index. But to outperform the seniors, we've put together a list of 11 small-cap gold stocks that range from producers, near producers, and exploration bets. That is just a very practical way of getting some exposure in the gold stocks where you could get a pretty good bang for your money. Now, I also admit that maybe one or two might not work. But we did this back in 1996 and got a list of the top five speculative junior gold stocks at that time. And one of them included Arequipa. It went to $30. Those are very nice. So we don't know how this may work, but being in the junior golds is a very practical way of getting into the gold play.
Bob, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you. And we have a long weekend up here, so I hope you have a very happy long weekend. And I hope the weather stays good.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. You can find us on X at House Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com Radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com Radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.